LNE Volume 3, a video by the great Franklin Carbonati, spanning Rome, Milan, London, New York, Paris, Barcelona, Montreal, and Toronto, featuring Rebo, Volvo, Snens, MTNW, Anger, Talker, Xavier, BO South, Lure, Rehab, Time, Zonic, XSM, Kemto, Salon, TD, Emno, Fayer, Toser, Nove, Stays, Villo, OSF, Waste, Soul, Zano, Guko, and What. The full video is now available on our Patreon. Enjoy, peace, love, and respect. Thank you for letting us in here, and thanks for coming on the show. We're super hyped. We're big fans and a lot of respect for people who do their thing, people who have companies like yours that are pretty unique in their approach and stand out from the wide sea of companies that exist. So thank you again for letting us here.
Thank you for having me, guys.
For
sure. Thank you for coming through. So
I kind of wanted to start with jiu-jitsu's roots, the old era to the modern day. Like, jiu-jitsu's roots were kind of founded off of Vale Tudo. You'd see videos of like fights at beaches. There was a lot of like challenge matches. I'm talking like when it first came to America, and you started training in like late 90s, right? Like 99-ish?
Correct.
So how was the scene when you started training? Was it kind of, did you see any of that stuff? Was it different from the way that it is now, even from like the class setups or anything like that?
Yeah, it was, in terms of the US, it was, I got exposed to it probably like 98-ish, 97-ish on Guam, where I was from. And then I moved to the US around 99. So, and then 99, around that time, that era, there might've been like one Gracie Baja at the time. So everything was kind of merged at that time. It was kind of getting out of that like half MMA, half jiu-jitsu gym. So majority of the gyms were in MMA schools or Taekwondo schools. I'm sorry, not even MMA schools at the time. It was probably like Taekwondo schools. And then with the exception of like the Gracie Academy, Hickson School, the Machado schools, like maybe Joe Marrero schools in the West Coast. And then of course the East Coast had theirs, but that was, there was only a few at that time, but it was kind of like a hybrid in between. It wasn't really, maybe the average school at that time was like 30 students, you know, like there was one kid that trained, right? But the average class was like 8 people. And of course, right, the Gracie Academy had probably like 300 or 50 at the time, but your average small school that was operating out of like a Taekwondo dojo, or you know, they just started their gym, probably had like 8 people in the class. You know, there was maybe one teenager that was like 14, you know.
So did you have any experience with Taekwondo, seeing as like the class was probably going on mixed and stuff like that? Or
no, it was more, I think what was happening was, I think probably from a business standpoint, people couldn't afford their own studios at the time yet, right? Because they're probably like getting ready to leave their old instructor to go start their own thing, right? Or whatever. So they would just take on the space, but they didn't want to, you know, pay $3,000 a month for rent when they didn't have any students yet. So they would probably rent a space from a Taekwondo or karate space, and you know, and then use it on its off hours, like 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock, and they'll run their class until they had enough students, and then they would like eventually go off and do their own thing at their own space. So
what was the Gracie Academy like, and why did you end up training there as opposed to other places?
I trained at a bunch of places at the time. I think the Gracie Academy thing, that's kind of like the mecca, right? So in terms of like what you're looking to try and achieve, that was kind of like the Disneyland of jiu-jitsu at that time. And probably still is to a certain extent to a lot of people. But I think once you explore that, you kind of saw like how dialed the program was, how structured the program was. And then of course, you know, floating around to small like independent gyms at the time, or little open mats, because it was super expensive at the time. And I was broke. So I trained there like once a week for a few months. And then after that, I kind of just switched and trained at a smaller school. And I think it was like in Costa Mesa at the time. So
where did your interest in jiu-jitsu stem from? Why did you choose that martial art as opposed to others? Especially at that time, it wasn't, you know, the most mainstream or the most popular.
In all honesty, I think it was really just, of course, right? You see the you watch the UFC, mm-hmm. and I grew up being a huge boxing fan. You know, did karate or kung fu, whatever your parents put you back in, like the 80s, right? I think what happened was then you start seeing like on Guam, it's similar to Hawaii. It's like localism's heavy. You know, everyone has to know how to fight, right? A small group of people were kind of doing it there, and they were kind of getting exposed to it. You know, some wrestlers, some people that were kind of it's close to Japan and Tokyo, so you got some of that synergy. Ensign, you know, had some influence in bringing people over. He was there a lot, so you had a lot of like Japanese influences in terms of like a couple locals like doing it, and it became like kind of interesting. And at the same time, right, you're watching UFC and you're like, oh, this is super interesting. And then once I came out here to go to school, I was like, once I get here, I need to see what that stuff is, you know. And that was kind of like my hook, you know. So
do you remember what your first impression was? Like you go into the gym, you go into the school, and you're seeing like maybe people, like what would they do for the warm-ups? Were people like shrimp across the mat, doing hip escapes, doing bridges? Like, was it that kind of thing? Because you mentioned Ensign, and he talks about how like one of the first times he went in, he was looking to do like Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and they're doing like, he just does like bridges across the mat. And then he goes up to the instructor, I forget who it was that he says, but he's like, am I going to learn what I've seen like in these challenge matches and shit? Like, no disrespect, you know, but like, what the hell did I just do? And then he was like, okay, yeah, roll with this kid. And the kid tapped him like mad times, his first time rolling. So what did you think when you were first exposed to it? And it's kind of like an odd thing where like you might walk in, they might be doing some crazy lapel guard where you're not going to understand the, maybe the application and why they're learning this. So was there any of that?
Yeah, I think jiu-jitsu then compared to jiu-jitsu now, it's a lot of it's still the same, believe it or not. You would think it's like really different, but a lot, you know, of course some gyms or some places are probably like more structured than, you know, other spots, but like real independent spots are still kind of doing it really similar to how it was back then. It maybe just, maybe there's like a little bit more like allowance for not being super duper hardcore with a new person, you know. That's probably the biggest difference, like since it came from like such a hardcore culture, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago in Brazil, right? And then now, fast forward, you know, just within like, you know, in the early 2000s, like it was very similar, right? Like very light warm up, right? If any warm up, right? Like jogging around for like 5 minutes, like not, you know, and then doing like a little exercising, but then other than that, you learn a technique, you drill it 3 times each side, and then you spar for like 30 minutes mm-hmm. or however long, right? And you might be the one white belt with like the other 10 people that are super advanced, and you're just kind of like sinking or swimming, you know. And then I think that was a big reason why also probably a long time ago, and even still till this day, I think probably some gyms that still kind of operate with that model have a hard time retaining more people, just because, you know, I think as much as I love jiu-jitsu, I'm also like I'm ultra critical on it, you know, and I'm probably like super duper hardcore personally, you know. But in terms of trying to expose it to more people, you know, not many people can like kind of hang with like drowning every single day or getting smashed every single day. And I think that's like, you know, for me, I love that stuff, but mm-hmm, yeah. but it's also like that's why I say a lot of, that's how it was probably in the beginning, probably times 10,
like no mercy for beginners
type. Yeah, shit. Like they didn't like really like they weren't even trying to like mess around, right? Like it was just like either you belong there or you didn't, you know. And like business was important, to keep the student was important, but I think like, hey, they're either with us or they're not, and if they're with us, they're our students, they deserve to be here. And I think, and that was kind of like the mindset. That's what I think made it rad, and that's what made it cool, but it also stunted I think the growth, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah.
And now it's a little bit more like, you know, balanced in that sense, right? Some schools are better than others in like guiding it, and then like after like a year they're like, hey, you know how to do this shit, like now you can do it, right? So that's what I love about jiu-jitsu. It's like there's always those weird things where like even if a guy's been doing it for like 10 years, they're like, what? That guy just went crazy with me, so I had to turn it on. I'm like, no, dude, he's just like trying to survive. Like he doesn't even know where to go.
I mean, it is pretty crazy. Like when you look at the history and stuff, and it's fascinating. and almost sounds like legend because that is what it is. You hear about like the challenge matches where they're essentially running up in people's schools, like and being like, "I'm gonna fight your head guy," like whoever's here, any weight class, no gloves, no rules, no nothing, and the only rule is like, "Can I film this?" So I can essentially make an example out of you to show, like, as a form of commercial. It really is. And then, like, when I hear about that time period where it's like all the martial arts are separate and maybe people don't believe in jiu-jitsu and they're coming here to, I guess, earn their respect in America, it's pretty crazy. So I find it really interesting, like, people who have trained even closer to that era, because obviously it's not like that anymore. There's a lot of, like, in quotes, like mercy for beginners, like people try to, me personally, my experience has been like super welcoming. Like I come from the first majority of my life is like skateboarding and graffiti, where there is no like real mercy for beginners. It's like a real like, this is us and then you're not a part of this, it doesn't really matter, and like if I'm better than you, I'm not going to be essentially friends with you, and I'm definitely not putting you on to any of my like knowledge and shit. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, I felt it was the opposite. I felt like these black belts are going to be super nice to me if they see that that maybe like someone's dedicated and really about it and really trying to learn and really trying to get better. They're going to accept them, and I thought that that was something pretty sick. Although I do see like the lore and attraction to like you come here and we fuck you up, and then like you are accepted after the fact, you know. And I think that's important too, honestly.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think there's like there's a beauty of like hazing, right? And kind of like earning your key, right? And I think that's I always compare it to surfing and localism, because on Guam that's what I did as a youth, right? And then, but it's also like the culture's super heavy, right? And I always compare the two, right? Because to me, surfing and jiu-jitsu, right? And then coming up on like vert skate and stuff in the 80s, right? I always felt like surfing specifically and localism was like probably one of those heavy cultures where it didn't matter if you're local, if you weren't, like if you didn't put in the time, like you can't get in line, you know? And once it's your time, it's your time. And that's just kind of what it is. And then I think, but then you're kind of like surrendering to mother nature. So there's some allowance there, right? There's like a bigger power. And then jiu-jitsu is kind of like similar in a sense where it's like, if it's a hardcore gym, you know, you have to kind of survive, but the heavier part is like, you're going against another person. So like, you know, and whatever that environment is. So like if you're surfing, you give up to the wave and you're just trying to get in the lineup and be a part of the pack once you're good enough. In jiu-jitsu, it's like, you're not trying to survive against mother nature. You're trying to survive within your peers. And then hopefully you can make it in the line when it's your time. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're saying, it's one of those things where like, I think there's always that like within like the community, they're always like, you got to be a little bit like off. There has to be something like mentally, whenever you're going to like one of these hardcore gyms, you know, like it's sink or swim, and like you're still around in like 3 years or 5 years, you know. So yeah, I'm into it, but then I'm also into the other side of like, hey, like this shit's got to transform over time, you know. There can be both, you know, but if we want other people to kind of like explore this, there should be, you know, different products or different gyms or different services for different types of people.
Yeah,
no, I definitely agree, because that's the beauty of it, I think, is the variety and like the options you have nowadays, because a lot of gyms have different reputations, and you can go to a gym just for competition, you can go to a gym just for essentially being a hobbyist, or you know, you can make your choice and you can try out different gyms, which is pretty sick, you know what I mean? And it's like you were saying, the beauty of it is also like, I don't know, I think, not to be too negative, but in today's society, maybe like people get, you know, trophies just for participating, and it's sick that that still exists, that root foundation of kind of just gritty and rough, if you want it to be there, you know what I mean? So that's cool.
Yeah, and I think maybe I think it's with jiu-jitsu, it's probably similar to any like culture that's like somewhat hardcore. It's like once you get it, and you're in, you know. And then of course there's like layers to that, and then the people that kind of like really really get it, or they get deeper into it, then like you're on that another subgroup within the group, you know. But I think overall, I think the community as it is, you know, for whatever reason, like I always tease everybody that's like super into jiu-jitsu, because I'm into it, right? I'm like, it's like a cult, you know, like in a sense where it's like once you're into it, you can't stop talking about it, like you're preaching to everybody, like you just can't shut up. But then and I think that's I think that's just a form of how powerful it is in terms of like helping people like adapt and change their life and adjust their lifestyles or mm-hmm. kind of just like de-stress, whatever form it helps
yeah.
people in, you know. So
yeah, you were saying you're like you enjoy that hardcore aspect as well, and like you're like critical towards it as well. What do you think are some of the problems in modern day jiu-jitsu culture, and how has the culture, like what are some of the things from the past that we could, I guess, re-implement or learn from, or even just adapt to our current modern day, some of the issues that are happening? You know, people talk about them all the time, but what do you think are some of the things that you would change or issues that you see?
Specifically in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
I think what happens is I think one, curriculum and just like general stuff. You know, I think culturally I think you can breed the hardcoreness of whatever it is that you're trying to achieve with a tiered down program in terms of like, hey, being a little bit more friendly. Like, and if you want it to be completely hardcore, right? I think that, because I think we're kind of like in that opposite sense right now. Everyone's just trying to make sure they're like welcoming to students, making sure people don't quit like their first week, mm-hmm. you know? So they might like overextend that, you know? So I think right now we're in that interesting part within like jiu-jitsu not being the next taekwondo in 30 years, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to figure out what that balance is, you know. And I think, and if you were to reverse that, like, you know, if you were to reverse that, like 20 years ago, it was like reverse of that. Like it would never be taekwondo because there's just no way there was, you know, any structure, any terms of like people trying to scale their business, you know? So I think in general, I just think it would be nice to explore like some, like maybe let's call it like the old school traditions of what it was and kind of embed some of that stuff without being like too like traditional or hardcore. And I think most places for the most part somewhat do it. And now there would be like, let's just use it. Like there would be a beginner class for somebody that was never exposed to jiu-jitsu. And then after, you know, 3 months or a year, whatever that gym did, they allowed that group of people to start working within the advanced group, and then it got like a little bit more intense, you know. So
do you think there's actually a chance that it does become like the next taekwondo watered down and essentially by the public not taken as seriously?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
you think there is a chance?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just like anything has like its like, you know, you have your growth phase, and then depending on how that gets commercialized over time and depending on who's in charge of it, there might be another one of these things in, you know, the next 30 years. I think we like to believe that like we're untouchable, right? Like we're different, right? But in reality, I think we are different, but I think it's no different than, you know, what some of the other popular things are in the past, you know? And I think mm-hmm. it definitely has the chance to not be the next taekwondo, but in terms of how things scale and how people want to try and monetize it, make a living from it, right? I think naturally they're just going to copy the models of all these, you know, martial arts businesses that were successful in the past. And then, you know, at that point, people are just going to be comparing how many students they have, right? Person driving the nicer car, blah, blah, blah. So I think we're always in that, like, we're always in kind of like that balance of how can you preserve what's like original and authentic to it? And then what do you lose in that phase? I think the nice part about jiu-jitsu that kind of somewhat protects it is like maybe that, like the rolling aspect of it, mm-hmm. you know? And I think just as long as like, I think that's why probably people don't like the drilling or like the non like rolling part of it, is it that rolling aspect, I think that sparring aspect keeps it somewhat in check. You know, but then the more that you remove that element of it, I think you get closer to, mm-hmm. you know, let's call it like the scaled version of what, or maybe it's even a different thing. In my opinion, it may not be jiu-jitsu that becomes taekwondo, but it may be a close version of what jiu-jitsu is, maybe like a spinoff, in my opinion. So
what do you think about, I like to watch a lot of old judo videos, and when I watch them, a lot of it has to do with like ideals and philosophies and convictions, almost like spirituality. It almost looks like you're watching like a video where they're speaking about like essentially like Buddhist and Taoist concepts of like how to be in life, what you have to be like a genuine human and the best version of yourself. They're always trying to achieve like a higher spiritual state, right? And I think about judo and how it has, you know, it's like the roots of jiu-jitsu, and as well as like Muay Thai, they do the ceremonies beforehand. There's a spiritual aspect. Or me and Jordan walked into a Shotokan karate gym just to see literally, and at the end, we walked in right at the end of class, and at the end of class they were like, everybody lined up, they were straight up silent for like a solid whole 15 seconds, which felt like way longer, and then they started chanting like codes, like they were chanting like seek perfection of character and a bunch of other stuff that actually like a famous karate man said. I just don't remember, but I looked it up after and I found it and I was like, oh shit. Anyways, that's something that, you know, I've been to a bunch of gyms and that's not really a part of it. Even though jiu-jitsu has its roots in judo and things that did have a part of it, even Japanese culture is filled with spirituality and thoughts on transcending life and death and a bunch of stuff like that. So what do you think about that, that that's not really a part of it? And was it ever a part of it when it came from either Japan to Brazil or Brazil to the States?
At least from my exposure to it and just kind of like being like a nut, kind of just like looking at some of the old cultural things, and, you know, of course, where it stemmed from and where it's at. I think for jiu-jitsu is one of those weird, weird things, right? It's weird in terms of like martial arts, right? Because martial arts is this ultra conservative, traditional thing in general, right? Mm-hmm. And then here comes Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which is like super loose, right? Very close to culturally how a lot of things are in Brazil, specifically in Rio, right? And a little bit of Sao Paulo. So I think jiu-jitsu is one of those things that, because it became Brazilian jiu-jitsu and like the lifestyle of what that is somewhat loose, right? Not super structured all the time. And not to say that, you know, the Gracie Academy has been structured in Rio forever, right? They've always had like structure, but like everybody or a majority of people besides that group at that time, you know, like everyone that was kind of going and doing their own thing, like it was just like, oh, well, there's like no real rules. We could just do it however you want it, you know? So I think that looseness allowed it to kind of like change and become like more laid back, right? Like you were saying, you go into like a judo school, a traditional like Kodokan, like karate school, or like, it's like, there's a lot of tradition, like, and you also can't break too much from tradition or else it's just not allowed, you know? And Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you could use like crazy things, right? You could use like, you know, and maybe crazy things now, but and if we were to reverse it real fast, just to like, and that's maybe how it's a little different, is I think the uniforms is just like the only form of clothing that you can use within gyms, right? So in martial arts schools, you have like one or two colors of product, and that's exactly how jiu-jitsu was 20 years ago. Like, it wasn't any different. You had a white gi and you had maybe a blue gi. Like, a blue gi was like, that was like new, and that was like very rare 20 years ago.
Really?
You know.
And no black?
No black yet.
Because I thought that the traditional colors were like black, blue, and white. No, or maybe that was just what's allowed in comp.
Correct. In competition, I think originally, right? Originally it was like unbleached, right? Because that's what came from the mill, and then it turned into like white, and those became like the dominant colors, right? It's very traditional to every other martial art as well. And then, you know, the color of blue got introduced, and like culturally, like no one even dared to wear that color in the gym in like 2000. Like, don't even try, right? Like, you would have to like train for like 15 years or be like a purple belt at the time, which was like the equivalent of like a 5-stripe black belt or something, right? Like in today's day.
In terms of what, like, skill, really?
In terms of like skill and accessibility, right? So, and this is California, right? And I'm talking about California specifically. I can only imagine what it would have been like in Kentucky, or, you know, like a blue belt there was probably like Helio Gracie or something, like someone that like Hickson or something, right? Because it's just like, it wasn't that big yet, you know? So, but just to kind of take it back to tradition, like that was like, jiu-jitsu wasn't very far off from what other martial arts were in terms of like culturally, what's what you can wear, what you can say, what you can, but like the class structure was still loose, right? Like it wasn't like you can explore more techniques, you can do more things, you know, blah blah blah. And then like start fast forwarding that, I think since also there's like a little bit of looseness, it created like a little bit of gray area for like, you know, how you can explore the culture. What do you want this culture to be? Is it okay? Is it not okay? And then like, you know, then gear started to change a little bit with time. And you're like, oh, like they don't have that in any of the martial arts, right? And then like, you know, so I think specifically good and bad, right? Like the beauty, and but then again, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is like, how much different is it really than, you know, judo, nawaza, a little bit of old wrestling, right? Like it's very similar.
Yeah, you see a lot of those old techniques, a lot of techniques now in old judo videos.
Yeah,
it's mind-boggling.
It's you know, and you know, just like judo, when judo they started to remove nawaza, which is basically jiu-jitsu, right? Like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, whatever you want to call it, right? Of course, this is like the new version. The guards like way more explored now, right? Especially within Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But like nawaza and judo is like very similar, and it's just they killed nawaza because judo became a sport, right? And like it had to be focused, you know. So I think like a lot of things are very similar, but I think that's the beauty and also the beast of jiu-jitsu is since it's such a loose, you know, since it's so loose and it can be interpreted a bunch of different ways, it can go really crazy really fast. And then also if there's not like the powers that be to kind of like keep it in line, like similar guidelines, it can just go like really wacky really fast, you know. So I
get really honestly filled with inspiration when I hear about these old stories. I was listening to some podcast and they were talking about how, I believe it was Firas Sahabi, talking about how in his era of coming up in BJJ, there was, I think he said, he might have straight up said one, at most there was two purple belts in the entire northeast coast of America, or it might have been the entire east coast of America. And he would drive hours with a GSP just to learn like straight up one class under this purple belt, drive back to Canada, and then practice on the grass with people who didn't train, trying to, you know, replicate. And then they would learn from books and stuff. And you talk about how it's, you know, filled with tradition, and as martial arts culture is, you being at the forefront of Shoyu Roll and, you know, dictating what occurs, and we can get into this later, but also like you can also shape a culture and shape perceptions, like how you said in this one interview, like when you're designing gis and you're making this stuff and some of it's like not the norm, you know what I mean? Like some of it is, if you were to have done it, like you said, like you wouldn't even dare to wear a blue gi. How do you feel? Do you try to like be careful with what you do, or is it time to, are we in a new age where it's time to expand and evolutionize? Like just the same way it's happened with technique, where like there are 16-year-old blue belts who are like insane, because the technique has evolved, because there's more openness to certain techniques. Same thing with maybe the culture as a whole. What do you think about that?
No, I think about it a lot, to be honest. That for me, that's probably like the only motivating factor anymore, right? Like making product is like whatever. Like of course you have to make good product, right? And of course exploring product is like probably the other really important part, right? And I think for me, like I always reference back to cultures and sports and industries that I'm familiar with, right? Because I'm not exposed to much. I don't do many things, and to me, like the biggest influences are, you know, early days in skate and, you know, being exposed to like surf and island culture and like reggae culture and like just like little hardcore cultures that like I'm personally into growing up. And I think for me, I think the biggest thing, if we were to learn anything from some of these industries, some of these things, and let's just use skate as an example, because I think it's probably by far probably one of the most like dialed, coolest cultures in terms of like lifestyles or sports or anything like that, you know. And I think to be able to somewhat do things that, the cool thing about skater, the cool thing about any culture is I just think they just do what they do. Like they're not trying to be anything, right? That's what makes them like amazing. But like if you can have some just like forward vision 50 or 100 or 200 years and say, hey, what we do is cool. It's cool already. Like you don't have to do anything else. Just do it. But then if you could just have some insight and just be like, well, what if we explored here? What if we explore there? What if we explore there? Like, most of the things probably are going to like be, you know, you're probably going to miss the mark, and yeah, or you might be like too far ahead, too far behind, whatever, right? And like your consumers or your culture may not even get it. But for me, I think it's like super important and interesting for the culture specifically to be somewhat, if other people within other spaces were looking in, they would think it's, they would find like interesting elements of maybe something they can relate to. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that's ultra important, because, and also important for the culture, because maybe other spaces are not doing it, that are maybe bigger than the space that we're in, or smaller, right? And I think for me, it's I don't know. So whenever we're trying to do something to push, you know, the needle every now and then, and we know probably it's a little much for maybe our consumers or the culture that we live in. It, like, I always reference in my head and just like, well, what would Skate do? What would it, like, what did Skate do 30 years ago? And was that impactful, right? Did a bunch of people hate it? Did a bunch of people love it? Was it a bad move? Was it a good move? And I think a lot of times we don't really know what that is. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think it's a fine line, 3,000%, I think. But I think it's also like, if people are truly trying to like bring the culture forward, mm-hmm. and they're not trying to just like be in the game for commerce, I think that's like the most important part. And I think normally people are just, they're in it for commerce, and they're like, oh, this product will sell well, right? I don't think many people wanna try and push the needle every now and then, even if stuff doesn't do well, just because they think it's interesting or add value to the culture. So
yeah, I think it's essentially a huge responsibility, and even with Shoyroll, it holds a lot of weight in kind of shaping and creating a path in which, like you guys were talking about earlier, what jiu-jitsu will be like in the future, you know what I mean? Like, it, whether it steers towards something like taekwondo or karate, or like you said, it steers towards skate culture, surfing, which is like essentially pretty sick, you know? And I think what you guys are doing with your brand is, it's really cool. And especially when you guys even go on your website, you have like articles and like old school, like photos, and just amazing content that, you know, it's kind of thinking outside the box that a lot of brands or maybe other subcultures are not lacking in, but maybe aren't providing exactly to the people, you know what I mean? And I think that's really inspiring and attractive to like the youth, or like someone wanting to get into jiu-jitsu, or even your brand, you know, which represents jiu-jitsu in a way, you know.
Go ahead.
No, I think for me it's like you go through this maturity of like after doing so many things for a period of time, right? You kind of like you somewhat think you know what you're supposed to do. You don't know what you're supposed to do. You're adapting, you're trying to do different things, but I think in general, for us and anybody else within the space, and anybody else that has like a position, if you have a position and you have a way to kind of somewhat have influence in adjusting some of those things, I think, you know, we wish more people that had the position that have power. Like, we don't like, you know, we already know we're older. Like, we're not like I'm not like a youth teen anymore that just wants to like do interesting things and have fun. You know, now I'm at a different phase, but then also we have to carry, you know, the culture forward, and we're hoping more people will jump in and push the culture forward. So anytime anybody's doing something interesting, I think it's like, it's a win, right? It doesn't matter if it's an individual or if it's a brand or a company or, you know, somewhat of an organization. I think that's what's needed. And I think the more minds that we have like that, I think the better. You know, I think just sometimes I think we all get tainted by, you know, doing business or selling things or doing things that sometimes that takes priority over like doing interesting things that are kind of like community based, you know. So the more things that we're kind of doing that are kind of like community based, and I'm not saying like sponsor a jiu-jitsu tournament or give a grappler a gi or something like that, I think the more stuff that we're doing that's community focused and the closer that we are to the youth, you know, kind of like when we first started, like that for us is like, that's kind of like the heartbeat, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
No, it's really cool. And I think there is a lot of power within being at the forefront of a brand to, you know, shape perception and also shape an era, literally, because, I think about like skating and brands like Antihero or Baker, like those videos, or even like more old school, like, I guess like Powell Peralta or Bones Brigade, like what they do in the videos is officially what the scene is. And that is officially the definition of that era. Or like you take Supreme now, and what they do is like kind of Supreme Palace, Alzheimer's, like these brands, like what they do is defining the scene. So they have a lot of say in what it is not only looked at today, but what it's remembered as and the direction that it goes. You know what I mean? It's a pretty crazy thing when you really think about that. And also, like, one of the things that I feel like some certain companies do and they do well is like one company that I look up to a lot is A-Life. Rob's like a friend of ours, the guy who made it essentially, and he talks about how like when people used to walk into A-Life and in the LES, like he wanted them to have like an experience rather than just like purchasing something, a feeling that goes along with that in general. And I think that's something that's a lot more than just product, you know. And it's like represents style, and it represents, I guess, like who you and your scene is. And I think that's such a sick thing to be able to do that, like behind a brand, you know?
Yeah, no. And I think we're just trying like anybody else's. And I think a bunch of other companies are trying to do the same thing. And I think if you were to look at the bulk of any industry, let's just use, you know, martial arts or jiu-jitsu specifically, in terms of like the consumers, the people that do it, you know, most people are simple people, right? They just go to work and they do their thing, and they go home to their girlfriend or their wife or their, you know, their kids, whatever it may be. And and that's their thing. They're not really interested in too many things other than that. They just love jiu-jitsu, you know? And I think it's different because our consumers are not looking for other things besides going in and rolling. So in that sense, it's a little different than maybe like basketball or skateboarding or surfing, right? So it's like, I think there's, when you're trying to add like other elements of like subculture to the culture you're in, or style or interesting ideas, when that's not what people are really like in it for, right? I think, you know, that becomes like somewhat of opportunity. And I think, just as long as you can continue to like try interesting things and do things within the space, I think you're able to like create this like interesting thing that like other people are not really like used to, you know. And even other martial arts or other industries are just like, what? Like, oh, that's kind of weird, you're doing that. Like, oh, okay, that's like, that's weird. But it's also, and then I think it's also like, in a sense, like kind of like staying in your lane and doing what you're supposed to do and doing what you do is like, becomes like challenging as well. And I think the good companies will kind of like dial it in. They'll stay in their pocket, they'll do what they do good, and then they'll just kind of like carry and push the culture forward, you know. So
yeah, it makes me think, like, not to generalize it, but it makes me think of huge corporations nowadays. They kind of, you know, run the show in society, you know, and everything is essentially, the root of those things is quick, accessible, just straight to the point, you know, like kind of, I don't want to say heartless, but like kind of just, you know, very accessible. So I think it's up to the small businesses, essentially, you know, compared to these big corporations, to provide something that still has heart, that still has true, like I said, attraction to something deeper than just quick, because that's kind of what society is nowadays. And I think it's amazing, like I said, that you guys have the opportunity to provide that type of content that is much deeper than just a quick Amazon add to the cart, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah. What do you think about your growing up in Guam, your upbringing there, and just like your life and how it was there to then moving to the States and having all of this happen?
For me, it's interesting because my parents are both from Guam, and I was born in like in Riverside in like Inland Empire, right? So it's like, I was born there and I was kind of like hanging out in basically like the sticks, right? Until I was like fourth grade or something. I moved to Guam when I was like 10 or whatever, like whatever you're, however old you are when you're
moved to
Guam. Okay. Yeah. So I was basically an American California boy, right? Like, just like anybody else in that era, like gangster rap, West Coast culture, right? And being like a typical California kid. And then going to Guam, right? Both my parents are there, but I'm American, so you move there, and then it's basically island culture, you know? So you're kind of like, you know, you're kind of exploring what those things are, right? So I'm an outsider trying to figure out how to become, you know, somewhat of a local, right? Because it's a new place for me, even though my parents are both from there, right? And then you kind of figure that out, and that kind of like adds layers to it. And then you kind of figure out like what island culture is like. And then coming back, you know, and then you're like, oh, like this is familiar, right? This is like California, West Coast culture in a sense, you know? And then, but then you can compare, you know, and then you're just kind of like adding whatever you're into. And at the time, right, I was just into, right, reggae culture, right, into surfing, skating, stuff that I came up on. And then I just like, you know, of course, some ball sports that you're into, and then you just get into jiu-jitsu. So for me, it's just, I think more so, I think I figured out like how to operate as an outsider, right? Like more so like a minority in a majority type group mindset. And I think that's why probably you gravitate to some of these communities or cultures or things, because you're like, oh, like this is another thing, like I'm a part of this thing, you know? And I think that's what became like attractive, you know, with like with any of these subcultures, that skating, surfing, you know, reggae culture, any of these other things. So yeah. So
what was life in Guam like when you, how long did you live there for, and what was your living situation like, and how do you think that living there influenced your mind and just your ideals on what life exactly is and how you act today?
Guam is like, I think it's a big part of who I am, right? Because I was basically there as a youth, and I graduated high school and I came right back out. So most of my life I was there. And so for me, it's just like, Guam's a super hospitable place, but it's like one of those places as well as like, if you don't respect the core values of what it is to be somewhat of a local Guamanian, then, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, like you don't belong. So kind of somewhat almost like of a hardcore mindset, right? Like if you can embody these values that are, that's that this place respects, then you're going to be good, right? And I think, so I think that was a big part of it, right? And I think just like watching, like, you know, it's a small place. There's not too many forms of like economy besides like tourism, right? And military. So like, you know, you're around big groups of people all the time, drugs, right? People like on welfare, right? Of course, a bunch of people are doing well in life as well, but you're kind of close to, at least my family specifically, you're exposed to it, right? So you're able to kind of be closer to like the soul of it, you know? And I think that, and then over here, you're able to like kind of get shielded, assuming you're not in those circumstances, you know? So, and you can get away from it a little bit easier out here than over there, because you're kind of like landlocked and you're on an island. And over there, like your reputation's everything. Because you can't just like go away. So if you fuck somebody, like you're gonna see them around. So I think that was probably the best thing I liked about being in a small place, and being like landlocked on an island, is people couldn't just do bad shit. You know, if you did bad shit, there was a consequence, and you're gonna have to see that person, you know, for the next year or 10 years, right? You can't just like run away, or most people couldn't. So I think that check and balance was kind of cool. So
after that, coming to the States and pursuing, I believe it was an engineering degree, what did your family think of you essentially not following through with it and, you know, starting your own brand essentially, which is a huge risk in like, you know, a traditional parent's mindsets, you know, because my family's from Russia. And, you know, if I told them, you know, I'm quitting my 9-to-5 and just pursuing like a YouTube podcast, they'd be like, you're insane. Like, you're going to live on the streets. You're going to be homeless. This is not stable at all. So what was that experience like, kind of transitioning from that environment to taking that decision on?
In all honesty, I think my parents were probably pretty, I think they were just stoked I went to school. You know, I think with what my family, what my cousins, where I came from, like going to college was like, that was kind of like kind of rare, you know? So just as long as I went to college, I think it was a win for them, you know? And then kind of like, of course, going through trying to become an engineer. And for me, in all honesty, I was just like, like I told myself I was gonna be an engineer when I was like 5. So that's the reason why, like, I'm trying to become an engineer. And then once I started doing engineering stuff, I'm like, this stuff sucks. Like, why am I like, this is not my personality. It's not what I want to do. And then you just kind of work jobs, and you know, you try and figure out where you can get a job, you can't get a job, and then, you know, just kind of doing like side hustles and things that kind of like, you know, I was promoting like reggae clubs, all kinds of stuff, like as a kid, just to try and like, you know, do different things and work odd end jobs. And then, you know, luckily enough, you know, the brand started to like slowly hit, you know, and then it was like, okay, well, and I think I got like a I was climbing my career path as like the company I was, and I was like making really good money, and I was like, oh, I don't know, man, like that's got benefits, like, you just got a house, you know, I just got a kid, blah blah blah. And it was like, so it didn't, there was also a little bit of like security in terms, because the brand was like a side hustle since like 99 2000, right? And then it just like started to like slowly pick up in like 06 08 ish, you know. And then I was working, and I was like, okay, well, it's I got like 3 months of rent, you know, so like I'll be good, right? So as much as it was a risk, it was also like, well, if I'm not responding back to emails like in 3 days, like this thing's gonna fall apart, so I gotta like quit soon. You know, so it was one of those like balance moments where it's like, hey, jump in, or like this thing's gonna start to fall apart. So it worked out. So I think my parents were, you know, at the same time, they were kind of like, oh, you're gonna do your own thing, that's kind of weird, you have a good job, you know, but they were cool, they were with whatever. So
what was the initial idea? I know you started it in a garage initially, you're just making t-shirts, so what was the initial idea behind it that fueled everything?
It's probably just skate stuff, right? Skate and surf stuff, right? Just like trying to be like a creative kid, like, oh, I want to put like my graphic on like a t-shirt, right? Like, and I think at the time, like you like, if you wanted to do that, you had to like go buy some like inkjet printer stuff and print it, and that was like your iron on at the time, right? And like, no, at least I didn't have enough money to go get like 20 shirts printed or whatever at like the local screen house or whatever. So I think realistically, right, and just kind of like, I don't know, growing up like tagging on books and stuff like that, right, and tagging and stuff like that, like I think creatively, I think you just want to be, or at least me personally, you just want to be seen, you know, whether it's by one person or by 100 people. Like, I think that was just an aversion of like you wanting to be seen, or me specifically wanting to be seen in some way, shape or form. So I think the brand at that time, printing t-shirts in 2000, was just an expression of me writing in a book when I was like 12 or something. You know, so, you know, not many, some people saw it one way and other people saw it different ways, but for me it was like, oh well, if I make this t-shirt, if I make 10 t-shirts, I give it to 9 people, I'm seen 9 more times, you know. I don't think it was so much like business, of course, trying to make like a brand, but like you don't like, I was based here in California, in Southern California, and there was like, it was like the surf mecca of the world. Like, if you weren't making stuff like, you know, the big brands, it's just like, don't even try, you know. So yeah, I think it was more just a creative expression, and once like you kind of find your niche and you figure out what works and you're able to like take that thing and run with it, then it became something. But other than that, I think it was just like an expression or an outlet. So
what was the original plan for it to be? You knew it was going to be BJJ company? Like, what was the deal? Because I heard you say like you didn't know at first, like, what is this?
Yeah, and we got lucky in all honesty, right? Like, we just got lucky, we were just like trying to figure it out. Like, we made some decent moves and some decent decisions in between those times, but like some of the decisions were like, I don't know. Like, a good example is like, we made t-shirts, right? It doesn't really count if you're just making like 20 t-shirts, right? Like, it's just for fun, really. And you're just doing it for fun. But what happened, I think, right around like 06-ish to like 2010-ish, like MMA was just like blowing up, right? Like, there was probably like, you know, it was Tap Out at the time, Affliction. Like, there was like, everybody wanted to be an MMA company. Every jiu-jitsu company became an MMA company, right? So it's like, what, that was one of those interesting like crossroads for us, where it's like, you know, we sponsor, or we're helping like 5 MMA fighters. Like, that's where most of our visibility is. Like, should we become an MMA apparel jiu-jitsu brand? Kinda, we'll still be a jiu-jitsu brand, because like 95% of the industry was going that way, you know. And then we're like, you know, like, it's just like, be a jiu-jitsu company. Right. So it was like that was one of those like hedged bets, you know. We didn't know if it was going to work or not. It was just like, well, and you know, maybe we can exist in this space a little better. And then it was like, and then, so that was that portion of it. And then the funny thing is, even, and you know, when we started to evolve the gi, there was a couple people making gis already at that time. So it wasn't like we were the first, right? I basically just tried to cherry pick what I thought was the best from every single company at the time making uniforms, and then we made our own uniform. I'm like, okay, put reggae stripes in the inside, put like a Rasta lion on the outside, put a big chest patch, and you know, like, and then I have all the best fabrics from all the key companies I liked at the time, right? That was it. It was like, it wasn't a big deal. It was just like, oh, I make like, I had a, we got lucky and we found like a supplier and they made like 50 geese for us or 30 geese. I forgot however many it was. But anyways, and I was like, at that time before social media, it was just like forms and stuff. So it's like, okay, I knew how it was to be on forms and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I'll just put this on the form and see if anybody likes it, right? And then like, you know, fortunately enough, like 10 people liked it or 20 people liked it. It helped me like pay for the cost of my geese, you know? And then I was like, oh, like, cool. You know, and then like slowly but surely, like it was like, you know, little by little got more traction and, you know, it started to pick up. And at that time, there wasn't anybody in the space doing it. You know, probably similar to what, you know, people do within, you know, within the shoe space back then, you know, and then now it's this whole other thing. But at the time when we were first somewhat first in, it was a different time. You know, I think we just were able to give people a different option, you know, so that's kind of like the run of it. So
what do you think? Cause I was hearing you speak and you were saying how it was like a while of you doing Show Your Role, up until you could finally quit your job and focus on it fully. What do you think did it? What do you think? What was the thing that you did, if any, that caused it? Like, oh shit, I can make the jump now. I can actually quit my job now. Because personally, me hearing this, and like I know you said something around like the eight years of like working on it. One would start to think, yo, it's 8 years, bro. Like, it's not gonna work anymore. This is just some for fun shit officially forever. So, what did it that really was like helped you make the plunge?
I think you start to see some traction, right? And I think like, you know, like for me, I was at a hard spot because I had a lot going on. Like I had a lot of like, you know, I had my family was just starting, right? And I just got like a house. I had a lot of shit that I had to pay for. You know, it'd be different if I didn't like, if I had like $1,000 like studio and like, you know, and I was just kicking it and just like, I didn't have much like living expense, you know? So I think everyone's tolerance is a little different, but I think for me, I think once we started to kind of get like, you know, more traction on like in the forums and the internet, and we're like, oh, okay, hey, we just sold 20 geese easily. Like we didn't have to like figure out how to go sell 20 geese at the time. Right. And it was like, okay. And then the next one's like, oh, we moved like 40 geese. Like, no problem, you know? And then like, you know, we're like, okay, let's try and do another one, a different style. And then it was like, oh shit, we just moved like 100 geese. Like, we're like, okay. Like, and then, you know, and so it's like, and it was also like pre like social media. So like, you weren't sure how traction was really happening, right? It was more just like buzz on like word of mouth or right. Or what's happening in the forums. Right. So I think once we got through like two or three where we were starting to see like double digit increases, we're like, okay, like we have to really try and figure this thing out, you know? And I think for us, like a big, and that was the basis of the brand as well, is like, we wanted to make something for two reasons, and like in small volume and move through it and be on to the next one. One, because we didn't have enough money to make a lot of them. Yeah. Two, because we come from an island and a small town, and being in an island and a small town, there's only so many places that you could go shop. So like when you go and, you know, you're going to the local fiesta or party or whatever, and it's like everyone's wearing the same Stussy shirt or whatever, right? You're like, oh, fuck. You know, so like, so for us, it was like, hey, we'll just, you know, you make something, you move on, right? This is like, I didn't even know about any of this, like whatever drop culture, whatever this is, whatever it's now, right? But I didn't know about that stuff. And I didn't learn about supply and demand in business school or any of that stuff, right? But the most important part was what you had is what you had. And then it was onto something that was new again. And then also the people that had it would appreciate it within the space. You know, so like you would, you know, and the people like that were on, like if you're in the gym, they're like, oh, like either that looks good or man, I tried to get it. Right. And this is like early. Right. And I think that like created kind of like somewhat of a community. And within jiu-jitsu, that was like very, very new. Right. It was like, they're like, huh? Like you're buying that karate uniform or jiu-jitsu uniform. And like, why would they only make 50? Like, we all want it, you know, like, or, you know, I want to buy one, but we can't buy that. We want the old one. Mm. You're like, no, no, the old one's done, right? Yeah. So it was like one of those weird things, you know, so.
Does it ever trip you out to see that there's like a whole resale market for it?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's somewhat like humbling and flattering, right? And I think for me, I think also like I grew up collecting stuff as a kid, right? Baseball cards like anybody else, right? And of course, any other thing, right? So I like things and I like rare things or unique things sometimes. So in terms of like paying a price for something that's like ridiculous to another person, it's like I'm very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, like, we also wanted, you know, the uniforms to be somewhat like coveted to like the group of people that had them, right? Whereas like 90% of the people are like, I don't see what the big deal is, like, or I don't like, what is it? So it looks like a uniform. Like, so like for me, it's like it's really cool because I think it's like it adds a layer to the culture. In terms of like, because we don't have many things that we can, in terms of like expressing ourselves, probably the same way that someone is with like shoes and ball sports, you know, like besides uniform and shoes, like that's their way to express themselves or socks, whatever. So for me, it was more so like an expression, uniqueness, and I think it's like, you know, if someone appreciates it more than the average person, then for me, it was rad. So
in terms of the collaborations that you do, are they your own personal, you know, companies that you looked up to when you were younger or like in the past, or do you have like kind of like a team that decides, and how does that work, and do you try to just stick true to like, you know, keeping Shoyiro like a legit, you know, like to the culture kind of a thing when you choose collaborations?
No, in collaborations we've been fortunate. We've worked with like a lot of good people that have helped bring different partnerships and things to the brand. You know, we have Zook and Japan, and he's like legendary in bringing us a bunch of opportunities with brands like WTAPS and Neighborhood and different things. And you know, Ollie's worked with us a bunch, and he's legendary in the space that he operates, and he's always bringing us stuff that's like interesting and unique, and he has like a really, really good taste on what's good and what's bad. And you know, there's multiple people that within the brand and the space over time that kind of like brought like potential partners or collaborators on, and we just kind of like look at it and see if it makes sense, you know, and then we just explore it. And some of the stuff, so we try to stay core in terms of like being close to the brand without like veering off. We veer off every now and then. It's not like always like super dialed in terms of like our approach, but for the most part, we just explore it. We see if someone's doing interesting things in their space, and sometimes we do kind of wacky stuff every now and then. But for the most part, like, I'm super interested in people that are building amazing things and doing real cool things or things within their space, you know. So it's kind of open in a sense too. So
now with everything that's happened, and you know, you coming from Guam, going to school, being into skating, reggae, all this stuff, and then, you know, Shoyiro becoming what it's become. Now that essentially it might feel like, or at least from an outsider's perspective, it looks like you've already done a lot with Shoyiro. What brings you happiness and peace, just mentally or even spiritually? Where do you go from here? What gives you the satisfaction when you're working?
And that's a really hard question, right? Because I think anybody that like wants to explore things, I think they're kind of somewhat lost, right? And I wish it would be jujitsu, mm-hmm. right? But I think since I do it so much, I think that gives me one layer of it, right? In terms of like stress and stuff, of course, like kids and family, that's like a basis of like, it is kind of like keeping you grounded, right? But in terms of like the brand specifically, and not trying to be spiritually, in terms of like exercise and family and all that stuff, I think it's really just the cultural part of like loving like what jiu-jitsu is in general, and being able to like lend a helping hand and pushing that further and further alongside, right? And I think like it's having a personality that like where the standards are so high, and peers that you look up to, or people that are alongside you, are kind of like almost somewhat unattainable, in the space to make sure you're doing things at that level or higher. So I think it's challenging to somewhat be happy, but I think jiu-jitsu, family, and pushing the culture forward, I think those are probably things that kind of help balance everything in general, in my opinion.
I want to say thank you for allowing us in here. It's been amazing, and thank you for sharing your ideas. All of us and a lot of people who we know really respect your brand, what you've done, and your work. So thank you for everything you do, and thank you for letting us in here.
No, thank you guys. Thank you for having me. You guys are the best.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you guys.
Peace. Okay.